Hi everyone, and welcome to this inaugural episode of the Interaction Lab podcast, brought to you by City Interaction Lab and the Centre for Human Computer Interaction Design at City University of London. I'm Stuart Scott, Interaction Lab Manager and host of the podcast, and I'm joined today by Dr. Ernesto Priego, who's a co-host but also strangely in the position of being a guest. Ernesto, say hey.
Hey.
Thanks for suggesting we do a podcast for the Interaction Lab. I think it's a great idea. And it's great that you managed to get some colleagues that you've worked with on a recent project to join us.
Sure, no problem. It's a pleasure to have this first ever Interaction Lab podcast. We'll have Simon Grennan from the University of Chester and Peter Wilkins from Douglas College in Vancouver, Canada.
Brilliant. And just to give some people some background, some context for this podcast, this episode and future episodes, we're planning to speak to experts in HCI and related fields from academia and industry. And we would just want to generate food for thought for friends of the lab, friends of the centre, and just people interested in design in general. So today we're speaking with Simon Grennan and Peter Wilkins, who will be telling us about their work in graphic medicine, specifically co-design around comics related to dementia care. As we're talking comics today, every hero needs an origin story. Simon, could you start off by introducing yourself, giving us a bit of background, where you work and what your interests are?
Sure, I'd be delighted, Stuart. I'm not a hero, but I do have an origin. Here it is. I'm Dr. Simon Grennan, and I am the leading research fellow at the University of Chester in the Faculty of Humanities and Arts. But actually, I am a practitioner, so I draw comics, and I run a collaborative visual arts studio with another artist. I'm based in North Wales and he works in Houston, Texas, and we've been working together for 29 and a half years, which is quite a long time. I do a little bit of academic work, so does he. So I do a bit of theory and a bit of practice, and it's all focused on seeing how drawing, and particularly storytelling drawing, can reveal things and move things along and provide experiences.
That sounds amazing. I mean, a lot of knowledge that you're drawing from there.
Yeah.
Great. And what about you, Peter? What's your origin?
Well, my origin is a long time ago. I did a PhD in literature, and I taught at Douglas College in Vancouver in the English department for several years. And as I was teaching literature classes, I became interested in including comics teaching in those classes, and it started with Satrapi's Persepolis, and then I just kept adding books to the syllabus. And then around 2011, I guess, I decided I would write a paper on comics, and I submitted it to a conference in Spain, and it was accepted, and that's where I met Simon. So that's our joint origin story. And currently I work in part of the college that's called the Training Group, where I design and run programs for at-risk and immigrant and refugee youth. And I try to get money from the government to run those programs. And I too, in my own little way, draw comics, because once I started getting interested in them theoretically, I thought I would give it a go.
Cool. You both got practical experience with the comics, and you both have origins in academia as well.
Yes.
And it sounds like you're both looking at it from both the literary perspective as well as the sort of getting your hands dirty and making things happen.
Yeah, Peter, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, to talk about comics from a literary perspective always gets people's hackles up a little bit, because we try to talk about comics as something distinct to itself, as its own medium. Okay, Simon.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. We overlap in some ways in terms of making and reading comics and thinking about comics with various devices and traditions in literature. But the massive elephant in the room, which always appears, and actually it isn't an elephant in the room, it gets talked about quite a lot, is the fact that visual things are not like words, and so there are various things that visual media afford that words don't. And so literature and the study of literature only comes up a bit short. And in fact, I seem to remember that this is a kind of conversation that Peter and I had in Spain. And on and off, the three of us have been having it ever since for the last 7 or 8 years about exactly what it means to tell stories visually rather than by rather than verbally. So definitely, I think we were quite well dressed in Spain, Peter. Actually.
I know that you were.
I feel like I've stumbled halfway through this conversation. I'm obviously the three of us, just to point out that Dr. Ernesto Priego is here as well from Citi. Maybe Ernesto, if you just want to introduce yourself quickly.
Thanks, Stuart, and thank you, Simon and Peter, for joining us in this. This is our first episode, right, Stuart, of the Interaction Lab podcast?
Yeah, so first episode, and it's good that you brought your friends along to help us out.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought that it would be cool to also, you know, have an opportunity to discuss, you know, issues related to our current work at HCID and our collaborations with people. And as Simon and Peter have said, you know, it's all part of a long conversation, I guess. You know, we've been having a scholarly, you know, friendly and inspiring conversation for a number of years, and it's nice to see that it's you know, materializing itself in the form of publications and conference presentations, etc. I have a background in English literature, and I did a PhD in information science, and I'm at Citi as a lecturer based at the Center for Human Computer Interaction Design, and so my dream has come true, basically, in terms of being able to collaborate with colleagues I admire, like Peter and Simon, into introducing user-centered design methods or activities like co-design to make comics, right? In this case, about dementia care, but hopefully about other topics as well. But currently, we've been working on comics about dementia care.
Well, I mean, we'll touch on your current work in a second. Just going back to sort of your origin, how you guys met. Actually, before that, just to say that, Simon, I understand where you're coming from with the whole visual thing. So, like, I sort of created a comic myself. I don't know if Ernesto told you.
It was yes.
A comic book anthology. I'll show you a link. You might not like it. I don't know.
I'm sure I will.
But it's, yeah, I'm sure I'll love it.
But the idea is it's about words and pictures, isn't it? And it's the collaboration of those two things that makes a comic what it is. I think without one or the other, it's just words or it's pictures. But the two, yeah, so I kind of get where you're coming from, just to sort of say that. When I said literary, that was the wrong phrase to use. Great. So you alluded to meeting in Spain. Do you just want to sort of share, like you mentioned, you're well-dressed. Is there an anecdote behind that? Do you want to share it, or is that something for you guys?
Well,
you
I
want to start with that.
It's an interesting one, Peter. I mean, I mentioned it. I think you were yeah. So when I go to comics conferences, and I started out like this, and I just carried on really. Although it's a kind of fiction, is that I'm always in a suit and tie, and it was a kind of plan that I had based on a kind of prejudicial notion of how comic scholars normally dress.
Okay.
And so early on in my academic career, I kind of did a bit of that with the comic scholars, and folks respond in various ways or not. And I think actually, Peter, you were kind of dressed well. You were dressed up too. And so we had a bit of like, oh, you're dressed up.
So the two guys in suits.
Spain, and actually, it was quite hot in Spain. So I think we were quite overdressed in a way.
I remember that Simon had these fantastic antique suits, and he would show up in a different one every day. My feeling about meeting Simon in Spain was that Simon seemed to know an awful lot about what he was talking about. So he not only looked good, he lived up to the appearance. So my career in comics is just trying to catch up to Simon.
So, guys, are we talking about the Alcalá de Henares conference?
Yes.
So this was 2000 and what? And
2012, 2011?
Okay,
Yeah.
yes. Yeah, I was not
Yes.
there, but yes, indeed. I maybe Simon Stewart, I think, could talk a bit briefly about the idea of drawing in drag. And I'm just thinking now about this relationship between performance and fiction, and
Sure.
perhaps,
That's become more explicit in comic studies as time has gone on,
it has,
particularly for
hasn't
me.
it? Yeah.
So Ernesto introduces the title or part of the title of my most recent comic, which is called Drawing in Drag by Mary Duval, in which I essentially perform as a Victorian female cartoonist of the 1870s, who was Mary Duval. And of course, I'm not Mary Duval. And so there's quite a lot of interest for me in how drawing can offer opportunities for pseudonym or visual ventriloquism, really, and what that means where you step into someone else's style of doing things or focus on subject matter and style that belongs essentially to a canon developed by somebody else.
Oh.
And that does go along with dressing up to go to conferences in antique suits.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a really fascinating idea. Because, I mean, I understand the idea of writing to a style,
Yeah.
but I'd never thought it's going as far as sort of, it's kind of like method writing or method drawing, isn't it? A method actor gets into the mindset by just being like the actor. You're doing the same thing, but to create
Yes, absolutely.
characters.
I mean, it's interesting how often in order to do that, it requires training to enable one to forget in a different way. So there is for me, I mean, for the three of us probably, we have a kind of idea that drawing isn't there is no natural drawing, that natural is always a kind of inverted commas, and so it always devolves to some kind of focus on thinking about what's excluded and what's included, i.e. methods of recreating certain types of stylistic effect. And actually in Parables of Care, the graphic medicine work that we worked on together, there's a definite aspect of that where very self-consciously styling it in a particular way to produce a particular type of reader effect.
Okay. I mean that's I kind of I'm looking at a copy of Parables of Care now, and I can kind of get where you're coming from. It's kind of it looks well, it looks like photographs. It looks quite realistic, but then it's got that scratchy look. So it's kind of I can see that there's something there, but I can't tell what the
Well,
thinking is behind.
the thing, I mean, apart from the, as it were, the mark, I mean, Peter, maybe you want to talk about the we could, I mean, we might be getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but about the way in which we thought about the mise en page, about Yon Koma and how the four panels work.
I mean, yeah. I mean, go ahead. I mean, and then we'll kind of retro. Well, then we'll kind of backtrack and say what Parables of Care is. But while we're on it, let's hit while we're hot, sort of thing.
Okay.
So when we were with an awful lot of decision making went into this quite short book. We had to think about how we were going to present these stories that came out of the Care and Share app. And we had to evaluate these stories and try to figure out what they were like and whether they had commonality with each other. And the literary genre that we thought really suited these stories was parables, because they were brief, they were enigmatic, they had a kind of surface meaning, but if you probed more deeply, all kinds of interesting things were going on. And then we looked for a comics analog to parable, and we decided that Yon Koma manga, or gag manga as it's called, was the perfect sort of comics design for these stories. Four panels. But kind of recursive. When you reach the end, you sort of have to go back and reread the other three panels, and it creates this kind of intense reading and looking process that grows the more times you look at the comic. So it's like a combination of a comics genre, gag manga, which is often, quite similar to the American style comic strip in a newspaper, and parables, a kind of literary genre that is. Has a long, long history, at least in the West.
It's brilliant. I mean, Ernesto explained it a bit to me prior to this, just to kind of get my head around it. But now that you've explained it, I can kind of see where you're coming from. So you've got, it's basically they've got a punchline at the end of each one, like the parable, the learning. Then you have to reread it in order to understand how they got to that learning, sort of thing.
Yes. Well, and
Yes.
also that, is the learning the learning?
Oh,
Maybe
right.
you are be maybe you're being misguided in some way by jumping to a conclusion about what's going on when really something else is going on, something deeper and more affective with an A.
Okay, I suppose to help the listeners that aren't familiar with parables of care, perhaps one of you, maybe Ernesto, can kind of give us a bit of an overview about what it was and what its aims were.
Sure, yes. Well, so Parables of Care was the result of, discussions about how to engage with an app developed by the Neil Maiden and team. Neil Maiden was then at the Center for Human Computer Interaction Design at CT. The app is called Care and Share, as Peter said, and it's an app, a database of collected case studies or really stories about how a number of carers of dementia carers engaged with situations around dementia. Dementia is a it's a growing health issue as people live older. It's a condition that say affects the way we remember things or our ability to recognize people or our environment. And this basically, gives us a, the app offered a plethora of stories, right? So by working in co-design workshop style with Peter and Simon and other researchers at CT and that were have been looking at issues of storytelling and health informatics, we sort of realized that we had what we had was a treasure trove of stories, right? It was really the Care and Share app is a library of stories about how people that care for people living with dementia, have faced of this situation. So we explore the ways of adapting them into comics form and of making a selection because some of the situations are common, right? So we did a content analysis in which we were able to identify common situations that emerge when dementia is present. For example, not recognizing a relative or someone we know, or forgetting where you are and not being able to get back home, or confusing one thing for another. So we made a little booklet containing these short stories, which are one, a page each, made of four panels each. And
Brilliant.
that matches the Yonkoma form that Peter was talking about. Manga is a name for Japanese comics, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
great. I mean, so that gets us grounded on sort of the work that you guys have been doing. So let's start with perhaps Simon. What are you guys working on at the moment?
So we're currently working rather shambolically because that's what that we enjoy ourselves too much to really completely focused, but we're working we're working on writing a paper that brings together parables of care with a related partner project which Peter has been developing in Canada called I Know How This Ends, which similarly aims to provide a in a different way a kind of overview of aspects of caring for dementia from a carer's point of view. So we're currently finishing up, Peter's certainly finishing up that, and we're working on trying to rationalize what these two things are about and how they've managed to take our thinking forward, and so that we can share our potential thoughts and insights academically.
Okay, and let's throw that over to Peter. So I know how this ends. You mind just giving me a bit of an overview about that and how that project came about?
Well, when Ernesto was just writing the proposal to do Parables of Care, he needed people to be partners, and I said, you know, that Douglas College could be put down as a partner. And as we were working through it, I thought, well, we could do something similar, a companion volume. And I Know How This Ends comes out of a series of interviews with professional caregivers, nurses, psychiatric nurses, care aides, and their experience of having family members with dementia and the crisis that introduces to their professional standing. So a nurse who could be perfectly capable of handling a person experiencing dementia in a clinical situation suddenly finds him or herself at a loose end when it's their mother or father who has the disease. So it's all about that sort of crisis of what it means when it hits close to home. The title comes from one of our interviewees who was talking about her mother, and she was saying to herself, you know, I know how this ends because I'm a professional caregiver. And that gave us the idea to think about these stories in terms of Greek tragedy. So instead of parable in this case, so I Know How This Ends is kind of loosely based on kind of a Euripidean tragedy. There's a chorus that are the other family members. There's a little bit of relief in it, but there's also this strong sense of inevitability. I think if you look at parables is all about like the hopefulness of the situation, the poetic capacity of the caregivers, how they can come up with solutions to problems that people with dementia have. I Know How This Ends is kind of darker because it acknowledges not only the death of the person experiencing dementia, but a kind of universal mortality.
Wow.
And I'm drawing that one to make it even darker.
Oh God! So it's kind of a, I mean, I don't know how Simon and Ernesto are going to write it up. It sounds like it's kind of a counterpoint to parables. You know, parables is just like, you know, here's some learnings that can be applied and make life a bit easier. Whereas I Know How It Ends is basically, well, we do this on a daily basis. We see everyone else, you know, strangers going through this, and we know how to cope. But as soon as it hits in the home, it kind of cuts deeper because, you know, you know what's going to happen. And, you know, even though you know the best practice, you can't be unemotive when you're in that situation, really, can you?
Exactly. Yeah, wow. So it's kind of like this collapsing of registers. The real thing that struck me about dementia from doing this project, and I'm by no means an expert, is that what's really intriguing about it philosophically is the way, like, the ground of reality just drops out when the person with dementia loses current reality. And suddenly your world as an interlocutor with a person with dementia is threatened by that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's been very interesting for me to see this journey from Parables of Care to I Know How This Ends is that even though it is true that the comic that we hope to release early next year, early meaning around February, as a printed publication, but also online. You know, that even though it is, darker in a way, it is not devoid of hope, or as Stuart said, you know, it is very difficult to read these stories and not feel empathy too. And, you know, when you asked us about our origin story, I did not mention that in this case, you know, my dad had dementia. He passed away now, and it was indeed a motivation not only to learn more about dementia but to do something about it. So you know, the user-centered focus has different layers here in this project, because, for instance, in this case, it was the personal experience with, you know, of dementia in the family that got me interested in the topic, and how I started, you know, prompting others to try to work on it. But also, you know, now that we have these interviews that we picked up, those that Neil had collected and that Peter has been doing his own workshops with his team over in Canada, and you know, this chorus, this Greek tragedy like chorus of voices, that polyphony of opinions and emotions, in the end, you know, it is not about the inevitability of death or of perhaps even dementia itself in some cases, but of hope that it's always a network that is involved, and that hopefully, you know, any readers will also realize that if they are going through this situation, they are not alone, and the power of stories is also the power of healing. And I find that design is at the core of this, because design, you know, for me really has to do with improving the life, the, you know, conditions of life, right? Like medicine, really, design seeks to make things better, like a better user experience means a better life, right? We're trying to bring these things together. That sometimes you have to go through the difficult, dark stuff in order to make things better for others.
Wow, it's well. I mean, thanks for sharing, Ernesto, and it's good. It's interesting to hear that your personal experiences is what inspired the project. And I suppose, because sort of things started with parables and they've moved into I Know How It Ends, perhaps, Simon, you could tell me how you got involved in parables, and just sort of take it from there.
Sure. I mean, by the time we were, we started to think about parables, and really Ernesto was leading it, we were constantly talking with each other about this, that, and the other in terms of our fields of expertise, and also, you know, what we were having for breakfast, what movies we might have seen, you know, what album was I kind of on the playlist. So we had this kind of developing flow of conversation. But an aspect of which was always a notion that that opportunities arise, and that we'd got to know each other's interests and areas of expertise and capacities and humour. And so all of that was the context. The parables, the opportunity to make something Ernesto recognised in the case of parables, and so that entered into this stream of conversation. Became a kind of focus, and so we managed to actually make something and do something, as well as having our conversations as normal and sharing our breakfast images and thoughts. and so that's how the parables came out of that kind of thing. And the interesting thing is to talk about. It's interesting thinking about parables, and I know how this ends. In terms of a kind of lighter or a darker experience, or a more or less hopeful experience, and one of the things that I think drove us forward pretty early together was the notion of the whole ecology of creating something like this. So the ecology of care, for instance, is something which is only really just being looked at in terms of dementia, about how a lot of focus on experiences of dementia and not so much focus on experiences of caring, or how dementia impacts social networks and environments more widely, and that was it. That was entirely where we were thinking. So we, in a sense, the everybody in a way has or will have experiences of dementia, even if they're not suffering from experiences of dementia themselves. And so there was this whole notion that our conversations, between the three of us, and the experience of a kind of ecology of care, meant that we could access very straightforward kind of sense of feeling about how things work, even though we are not dementia experts. And so, I mean, obviously we started to work with folks who'd done work already, and there's a lot of information and expertise. But in a sense, it's always both of the books are really about trying to give a particular set of sensations to the reader. which are about the broader ecology of experiences of dementia, I think. Is that, do, have I, is that, have I put that badly, gentlemen?
Not at all. No. What do you think, Peter?
No, I think that's exactly right. What's interesting to me about this project, and I have to give credit to Ernesto for this because without him we never would have been doing it,
Thank you, guys.
is that it's been an incredibly productive project. We've produced multiple conference presentations, all of them distinct. We're working on this paper. We've met all kinds of people who are also working on similar projects. We interact with people who are nurses. That's been fantastic.
So it's not just a, but it's not just the outputs, is it? It's hopefully the impact it's having in helping change people's minds or give people different perception of the subject matter must also be valuable.
It's a little book, it's 16 pages long, but it's done all this work.
Little book that could.
Yes, exactly.
Yes,
Yeah.
indeed. I mean, it's
And
been
I mean,
nice.
what?
Go ahead, Simon.
Sorry, Ernesto. What I mean, one of the things that interests me, it's unexpected. I don't know whether it should have been unexpected for me because retrospectively you think, oh, of course that was bound to happen, but I hadn't thought of it really when we were kind of making the book. Is about contributing to the burgeoning genre and thinking about the genre of graphic medicine. And so graphic medicine is a kind of thing that for me when we began was, I mean, I knew what it was and it was kind of over there. But now actually, I think the Parables contributes to people has is contributing to people's thinking about what graphic medicine can be. And maybe in a and it, we're continually, I think, in the or now in this phase of graphic medicine at a kind of expansive phase where the genre has started in one or two places and is now grown to encompass all sorts of different types of things. And I think that Parables is part of that.
Yeah, that's I agree.
So it's basically like a one of the early works in that field, do you think, or like a kind of a
No, I don't think so. I mean, graphic medicine, it's really easy to date when it kind of appeared because the term was coined by Dr. Ian Williams, who was a GP and a comic scholar and a practitioner, an artist. And he, I mean, I think it's 2011 he started to use it properly, maybe a little earlier, 2010. And suddenly there's a website which is very well used, and then there are works that were identified as pre-canonical works, which are often about either, I don't, they're often autobiographical. And so Parables comes relatively late in that. It's not a foundational work in any means, but there is this thing going on in graphic medicine where its foundation was really about autobiography, plus a bit of teaching, our pedagogic kind of stuff, and then therapeutic reading. And that core has expanded into all sorts of interesting things, particularly to do with this notion of how medicine is effective or and affecting of the broader environment, folks who are kind of in it who aren't suffering from something. And so that I think is where Parables has had some impact.
And just for those people that are listening that might not be aware, do you mind just explaining what graphic medicine is? Graphical medicine, graphics medicine is?
Graphic medicine. So, who wants to do that?
I've got
Maybe
a
I can
little
ask.
paper with. Okay, Peter, go for it.
Well, I think what's interesting to me about graphic medicine is, on the one hand, a lot of works that fall into that category are there by accident. They just happen to be about the medical system, about a person's medical experience, about their engagement with the medical system. It's like doctors and nurses talking about their experiences. So I'm not sure how many works of graphic medicine were actually designed to be graphic medicine. And I think Parables is part of a new movement to design works as in terms of their medical effect.
So it's like what
Yes.
Simon mentioned about it's designed to have an outcome or to change thinking or to sort of create feeling
Yes.
in the audience.
You know what, Stuart,
Yes.
I also like the, this is why I love talking, like doing work like this, like brainstorming ideas in a conversational style. And many times that we have chat you know, in between photos of breakfast and teacups and beer and stuff.
Your
you know,
WhatsApp group
it's
must be very busy.
It is, yeah. But you know, it has allowed the project to be an ongoing process and not just, you know, sort of output orientated only, but about the process, I guess. But what was I going to say is yes, that this idea that Simon just shared with us as well about the ecology of care, I think has an echo in our interest in certain comics in the ecology of research, probably. That it matches this sort of new wave, perhaps, of comics about medical topics that we may call graphic medicine, that are purposefully designed to communicate information or to achieve an effect, which are not necessarily fiction comics or autobiographical comics. You know, are the result as well of a long journey, at least in the case of Simon, in Peter's case, in my case, you know, in your case, Stuart, we have like different journeys in terms of our relationship to comic books. But we find ourselves, you know, in that point of connection, you know, it is comics, right? It is the medium of comics that we see as very powerful for different reasons, and comics are at the center of the activity. So they are not sort of a replaceable medium. It's not like they are their own thing, right? So inserting them in the ecology of research, and therefore in the ecology, we could say, you know, or in the fields of medical humanities or interaction design, or even why not if they are digital comics of health informatics.
So,
you know, it's one of our goals or intentions or motivations, right? Yes.
Okay. The idea is the comic isn't just an artifact at the end of something, it's the thing in itself, sort of thing.
In a way, yes. Yes.
Yeah. And so just going back to the parables of care and maybe touching on how it ends, do you mind just talking us through the process, Peter? So what did you do and how did you guys go about doing it?
Well, with parables, we all sort of met online with the HCID team and Simon and me and Ruhina Rana and Marie-Pierre Caron, who are members of my team here, who I couldn't have done this project without. And we just shared ideas about, you know, we knew we wanted to make a comic out of these stories, but we didn't really know how we were going to proceed. But through our discussions, and kind of serendipitously, we just kind of hit on these modes or genres that we wanted to employ. And I don't think you can overvalue that sort of, oh, like a kind of different eureka moments that we had to create the book. If you notice, like the color palette that Simon uses, it's got kind of an institutional look to it. Everything just kind of clicked into place. I know how this ends was a little bit more fraught because we had a young artist who was working with us who got a job, and she did great work. But once she got her job at a design studio, she couldn't keep up with the work. So eventually I just had to take the reins myself and push it out with my own limited artistic capacity. And so that was a little bit more frantic. But I think the cool thing about parables is the way that we hit upon certain things that just clicked, that were completely non-scientific. For instance, if you look at the cover of parables, it looks like the cover of a romance comic. And it's, I mean, that's just perfect. And there are all these little things about it that I don't know that any reader or every reader is going to get. But to us, I think they seem really important.
Yeah, could you talk a bit more, Peter, about what you learned by drawing I Know How This Ends? Because it's been quite a journey too, right, in terms of your own thinking about what comics can be or can do.
I think it really put me in touch physically with some of Simon's ideas about drawing and what you do when you draw, when you go to the, in my case, an iPad every day, and you just work on the subject. And you do develop a very intense, I wouldn't say it was an understanding, but a kind of feeling for what you're drawing. Is that too flaky, Simon?
No, I don't think that's flaky at all. I think that's true. It's craft, and therefore there is an aspect of it which is really, really very materialistic, and the opposite of numinous, which is to do with training yourself and training your body to do things and to think a certain way. And so that's the intensity, in a way. You had a kind of half-made table, and then you were in a situation where you had to make the other half.
And
that's hard work, because you think, Christ, I've got a couple of legs to make, and how do you make a leg, and how do you fit it to this, and is it that shape, and how do you polish it, and all of that is training. And so the profound intensity that involves is not like book learning. It's literally craft training, and it's entirely embodied, including mind. And so that's what you have to do. So actually doing it, being under the gun, oh goodness, I've got a deadline, need to get this done, got to make another leg, got to polish the tabletop, got to put a bit of beading around the side. All of those things focus the whole body. It's a very physical, encompassing experience, I think.
This is where we pitch another one of Simon's books, which is called A Theory of Drawing.
Ernesto, if you're gonna push my book, you get the bleeding title right.
What's the title again?
A Theory of Drawing is someone else's book.
A Theory of Narrative Drawing, isn't it?
Okay, thank God for that.
Yeah. What's the title?
Available.
A Theory of Narrative Drawing.
Yeah, that's what I said. It's my mispronunciation.
You said A Theory of Drawing, not you lift out the narrative.
Oh, sorry. I'm talking here to my laptop and my record.
It's okay. It's okay. I mean, it does help that you've got the author, like online as well.
Yes.
Yeah. It's
on sale now for £10.
That's right. It's a tenner at the moment.
Not because it's been remaindered, but because
it's Black Friday.
Yeah.
Anyway, we might be moving slightly off subject.
Yeah,
This is very naturalistic. This is what happens normally, guys. Sorry.
Yeah. Going back to poor Peter having to pick up the pieces after that was good. That was Peter picking up the pieces after the artist left. Were you able to salvage anything that they'd done, or did you have to start from scratch? And also following on from that, like you said that. You designed the pages on parables to reflect the manga style. Was there any thinking behind the number of panels and the layout on I Know How It Ends?
In I Know How This Ends, I used a six panel grid of 5x5 squares, simply because that is the format that I feel most comfortable working in. Okay. It gives a nice rhythm to the page. It is pretty much, I would say, this standard grid of kind of indie art comic. So maybe there's some of that to it. I don't know. Every time I draw comics, I just use a six-panel grid. So it wasn't as theorized as the Yonkoma manga was for parables.
Okay.
It's the only way I can do it.
As a result, I think that... I Know How This Ends is in some ways, I suppose technically I'd say an easier read than parables. One of the interesting things about Yonkoma manga, the gag manga, is that the more difficult the gag is to get in Japan, the higher the status of the work. And so there's this notion of challenging the reader with the form to say to the reader, there is sense in here, but if you don't, and we challenge you to find it, because we're going to put obstacles in your way And that's the tension that is invoked and produced by the gag. And that's very, very different to the form of I Know How This Ends, where actually those transitions and panel transitions in terms of storytelling are meant to become relatively invisible. They're not in themselves challenging, or they're not in themselves affecting. They don't foreground themselves in the same way as they do in parables, because it's a different type of project, I think. Is that right, Peter?
Yeah, it's a little damning with faint praise, but...
Oh, God.
No, I'm just... Are
That's
you
right.
suggesting so, my work is
the,
not
the
challenging?
The six-panel grid is so... it's masterfully invisible. How's that?
I'm really looking forward to having some workshops with readers in the Interaction
yes.
Lab, Stuart. Once both publications are available on print, so we already have Parables, but once we have I Know How This Ends out, we will have these workshops with readers or users of the comic, and it would be interesting to see what they make of it. I mean, of both of them. I see them as part of the same ongoing narrative, and I think it's really interesting, you know, the idea of what is challenging and the idea of interpretation, the idea of, you know, how we make sense of things, because dementia is in itself a challenge to our, you know, to the way we interpret the world, right? And reality. Yeah. And in parables, there are very nice parables, I think, about how we can adapt our expectations and maybe ability to react or to interpret and reinterpret realities or the world, whatever that means, right? So you know, I think, again, it is a question of adaptability as well. So taking adaptation in terms of, okay, we have these case studies, we have these interviews, we have all this qualitative data, how do we make it into a comic?
And it's an
issue of design, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so in terms of that, like, do you mind, what if you give us a sort of step-by-step about how you went from, you know, your source material, like the interviews and the case studies, et cetera, to these finished outputs, like where it's, you know, who prepared the script, who decided the stories, I don't know, how you went about that. So just maybe like just a brief rundown of like, oh, we did this, then we did that and the other, just to kind of people can get an idea of your approach.
I can do that.
Thank
yes,
you.
Please.
Okay.
Yes, please, Simon.
Go for it.
Sure. So very briefly, for Parables of Care, there were already this format provided by the database that had been developed at City, and the format was for carers sharing their responses, creative responses to challenges that they'd met as carers. And so there was already, in a sense, a series of very short stories that were formatted in a particular way, which described who these folks were, the carers, what the challenge was that they'd come across, how they had responded to it creatively, and what they felt the effects of that had been, essentially. And so there was already a kind of structure to the storytelling as a given that we came across. And the database was a great resource, I think, and it really was, as Ernesto says, a kind of treasury of stories. But also there was a formal aspect to that. So you think, okay, that's a given in a way. And so we started to think about really how we felt reading these stories, and what we felt the emotional centers of the stories were, and then we were able to group those stories into various types, really according to not necessarily according to the technical responses of this is how you do that or that, but more to do with the emotional responses that were embedded in the stories. So we were able to come up with maybe, you know, to 10 or 15 types where the stories fit certain types of emotional character, and it was at that moment that we started to think about what the challenges were in terms of putting the reader into the situation of reading these stories, and facing those challenges, feeling the challenge, which is something that we felt in every case. We felt the challenge that had faced the carer as well as the patient. And so on that basis, that's when we came up with this idea of looking for the analogy in gag, in the gag form, because of the tension and the challenge to reading. And after that, in a sense, it was kind of plain sailing. We chose stuff. We wanted the comic to look like a comic, and hence the romance, the kind of romance references, or the reference to American classic comics of the 60s or 50s, maybe, in the cover. And that was it. So that was the process, that arc. There was workshopping, there was testing, there was a lot of conversation, there were lots of different people involved. But I think that's how the sequence of events kind of planned out. I mean, it's interesting. I think, and I know how this ends, Peter's drawing style is much, much more significant to the feeling of the stories, the episodes, than in Parables. I think that the drawing style that I employed in Parables has a kind of, it could be this, it could be that. Whereas I think in I Know How This Ends, I think that the drawing style works much harder, does much more of the heavy lifting.
So you started off with these case studies, you found the emotion behind them, then you built narratives and a structure around that. And you're saying with Parables, you know, you've kind of left it ambiguous in terms of the artwork, whereas with I Know How It Ends, you think it's a bit more explicit what's going on.
I think that the emotional punch resides more in the art, more in the drawing style in I Know How This Ends than it does in Parables. I think Parables has this kind of information giving drawing style, whereas which you kind of recognize as a reader as such. I mean, it's on the level of, I can say, you know, the artwork's not great. And what I mean by that is that there's not much significance in it, that the significance lies elsewhere. Whereas I think that in I Know How This Ends, I think actually Peter's drawing style does quite a lot more work. You get more emotional punch off the drawing style itself than you do in Parables, I think.
But Peter, what's your response to that?
Well, I think the art is fantastic in Parables, first off.
I think Simon is being very humble.
Yes.
It's not a question of achievement or ability. I'm simply talking about, I'm talking from a reader point of view. You know what a maniac I am. I have no ego in terms of drawing. I can make a good drawing and a bad drawing, and you know, whatever. So but I think in terms of the reader, I think that there's more significance in the style of the drawing in I Know How This Ends than there is in Parables for me.
Our listeners will be dying to see I Know How This Ends, and it's still not out yet. So
they really want to know how this ends.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think in I Know How This Ends, there's much more of an emphasis on the face and the close-up, whereas in Parables, things are a little bit more distant.
Yeah.
I think there is, in Parables, this nice contrast between a kind of clinical removed view and the emotional impact of manga. And I think that emotional impact comes from the poetic ability of the caregivers to devise temporary reprieves for patients. And one thing I've learned from this project is temporary reprieves are really important, because in the end, that's all there is. I Know How This Ends, I wanted to say earlier, it's a dark story, but tragedy is also cathartic in a way. You're supposed to sort of cleanse yourself of certain emotional vectors. And after we had a little interview with our interviewees after we had decided what form the story would take, and for a couple of them, the person who had dementia had died, and their experience was completely changed by that fact. They were much more relieved, and they were able to look at their experience with more, you know, they were sort of out of the grip of dementia in a way. And they all said how much the talking through their stories was really important to them, and that nobody in the health industry had ever done that for them. Like, they had never been able to sit down and talk about what it was like for them. And I think that's partly because when we think of the medical system, it's so focused on the person who has the affliction, But dementia is like this family system disease. It affects everybody and totally transforms the family network. And I think that was really powerful to me. So I was trying to capture that feeling.
That's true. It sort of goes against, storytelling in a way. It has also been commodified, through technology and new distribution systems and, et cetera. But in like narrative medicine or, qualitative, or palliative care, has been one of the key victims of, neoliberal policies, et cetera. And I feel like, if you think that a GP has like 10 minute stops to talk to a patient, and often it's just that person only, and rarely, it will be two people going, into the GPs, at least that in the UK, I guess in a way, we are also trying to contribute to a more humane, more a way of thinking about health or afflictions that affect health in a way that has storytelling and empathy at its core, and dialogue and images and put together, as comics can, we think, contribute to that. Yeah, to contribute to address that.
My feeling about this in terms of research is to sort of ask the question, what if everything that you're trying to get out of your study, because it reeks of emotionality and subjectivity and particularity, what if that's the really important stuff? I was at a conference the other week where one of the keynotes was talking about. It was a criminology conference, 100 years of criminal justice in Canada, and one of the keynotes was talking about the that we were in this real struggle now in all kinds of dimensions between reason and emotion, and I thought that was totally f***ed up. Sorry for saying that on the podcast, because I think the real problem is not like this battle between irrational emotion and calm, cool reason. It's been the neglect of emotionality as an object of study for the past 30 years.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, me
I mean, this has gotten deep very quickly.
It's always been deep.
Yeah, I like it. I like it because I think, like you said, you could just talk about this from a very clinical academic perspective of, we produced this artifact and, we hope the outcome is this. But the fact that you guys are such so emotionally connected with it, and you hope it, the whole aim was to for it to resonate emotionally with people, that's quite not unheard of, but it's kind of a bit not the standard academic, what people think of academia, is it really? It's kind of goes against the grain somewhat.
Yay.
Yeah, I hope so.
I'm glad, because I think that's what research should be about as well, about being passionate about a topic or an approach because we think it matters, and because there is, especially today, there is so much emphasis on having an impact, and that's what impact should be about talking to people about what affects them, right? And if you read the statistics, and if you see them, you see worldwide, dementia is it is one of the key challenges of our time. And if we only have, it's funny, right? That clinical can be used in that sense of non, dispassionate or not engaged, not emotionally engaged way. But we actually would like to introduce more of that. I think that there's nothing more dispiriting than not being able to talk about the emotional effect that illness or health conditions can have on us as human beings, and hopefully our research can contribute to address that lack, you know, of empathy, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very noble goal. And I suppose that leads us on to the outcomes from the project. So I know that sort of, I know how it ends is still a work in progress, but in terms of parables and sort of your wider works, what do you think the outcomes have been so far? So let's start with Simon on this one.
So I think, I mean, the project is quite modest. As Peter says, it's this, you know, 16-page book, 14 stories, however, 14 times four panels is, it's relatively small. The distribution has been, continues to be relatively wide because we, it's not exactly unplanned, but we carry it with us. And so we're constantly live with it. We're not like, in a sense, on a production schedule with it, where that's the book that we produced and kind of marketed and put out there last year, and now we're on to the next book, you know, in a kind of year or 18 month cycle. Parables is kind of grows and finds its kind of place internationally as we travel around and talk about things and kind of do things. And so the impact, I mean, we've given away a lot of them. There's been a lot of download of it. There's been a lot of carer commentary about it. And I think that in terms of graphic medicine, there's also this notion of contributing to debates, which are academic debates in a way. So it's not at the, it's not really at the end by any means of its impact life. And particularly as the offshoots of it, in terms of, I know how this ends, it is a separate project, but it's related in a very intimate way to parables. And so I think that there's, in a sense, there's a kind of snowballing of the whole thing. Parables hasn't gone away in the way that some other, say, I don't know, comics of mine have, where they've been produced, consumed, logged, impact statements made, and then silence. Parables is kind of still resonates and has this kind of growing voice. So there's still stuff to learn about it. So I think we're in that situation, which is it's unusual, I think, and kind of heartening. Because we're still having those conversations and there's still work to be done with other people who've been impacted by what we did to start with. So that's good.
Okay, and the same question to Peter?
I have produced, I think, about 400 copies at our print shop at the college, at Douglas College. There's a class and a Bachelor of Science nursing class for which it's a textbook, so they take 60 copies every term. I was invited to give a talk at a psychiatric nursing class just last Friday, and I gave out 40 copies then. So we're just always always hustling, man. I have never really been involved with something quite like this, where it is a little project. It's really exemplary of how to do projects, I think. You know, a modest project can have this ripple effect that just keeps going and going. And I just feel kind of like we're getting started with this project, even though we've been working on it for several years.
Brilliant. I suppose that leads nicely to my next question. So, you know, you said it's this little project that's made a massive impact. For other people that want to consider getting into graphic medicine or just using comics within their research, what could they learn from your experience of producing these artifacts or these, not just artifacts, these creative pieces?
Well, if I can chip in here, I think something to learn perhaps, or no. I wouldn't say that, but I think that, you know, what's worked well for us has been to have found each other in a, you know, as a team that has an ongoing relationship in terms of mutual interests, and that we see it as a living project. It was not a project that, you know, obviously, you know, we're very grateful that we got the funding from the School of Computer Science, Mathematics and Engineering at City to do this impact project. You know, it allowed us to make the comic. But really, the it's been a very economical, you know, affordable project to make, you know, to do. It's more about the engagement with your team, with your fellow team members, and the interest in creating engagement outside academia, I guess. So giving it a Creative Commons license, depositing the PDF file in our respective open access repositories, blogging about it, making different presentations about it in for different conferences that have different audiences in different places. As they have said, to always carry copies with us, to encourage translations because it's been translated into French, into Spanish, into German. And because of the open licensing, it's been other people who have volunteered the translations. Simon has also kindly volunteered his labor, his time to, you know, redesign the comics for different languages. In September last year, I gave a lecture about the process behind Parables of Care, and we did in cooperation with the Universidad Autónoma Metropolitana in Mexico, we did print copies of the Spanish version. So, you know, the openness of the project in terms of licensing, in terms of going digital and print, and our mutual synergy, you know, the synergy that the group has created and our interest in disseminating it is something that I think has been good practice. It's very time consuming though, and it one needs to be willing to do it, and you know, I appreciate Simon's and Peter's patience with me, but I think, you know, it's been mutual, reciprocal. We have been understanding that we are all human beings, and so it's not just work, it is work and life, and that can be complicated, but it can
it's interesting. I think that we have just by accident had the capacity to be quite focused on what we thought was important about the project together, whilst at the same time being open to any and all ideas. So there is the energy in the project for me derives from that combination of being really quite acute and maintaining acuity about what it is we were doing, at the same time being open to methods and ideas and types of content that might in other circumstances be difficult if we were. So, I mean, we are quite a cross-disciplinary team, and we do have that ability to come up with stuff and say, well, I've had this thought, or wouldn't it be nice if, or that fits with that, or to introduce an idea that could be quite radical or even bizarre in some other circumstances, and for us to test those things against our focus.
Yes.
And so we're constantly oscillating between just chucking it out there and going, oh, let's make an opera. Yeah. and then maintaining a kind of focus on why we'd do that, what would be interesting about it.
Yeah.
To return to Stuart's original question, if somebody was considering a project like this, I would say you should definitely do it. Especially, I think, like, art is really important. And especially important in these medical situations where people are in conditions where expressing themselves and how they're really feeling is very, very difficult. There's a real requirement for a kind of impressionistic and expressionistic response to these situations, and that you know, it could be painting. I think of like war artists, you know, going out into the field and drawing the battle. When you lose that, you lose a really significant dimension to your research. So more drawing, more art. Think about the aesthetic dimension of whatever project you're working on, as long as it involves human beings.
I mean, it's interesting, right? Because in the 90s, there was much talk about, deconstruction and Derrida's ideas on logocentrism over, phonocentrism. But, in research and in higher education in general, there's also, unless you study art or perhaps design, people are really discouraged, from drawing or from thinking visually. And just as we think of, or we talk of, speak of design thinking, we should also think of, graphic storytelling or comics thinking. It is a way of thinking too that can help us, if not as necessarily as the main output of our research, it can help us shape our ideas for research that may have different, channels or different forms of being outputs. And I think, it is really tragic that kids would be discouraged from drawing, say in school, right? Like, if you're doodling while taking a lecture or something, and the tutor will be like, "Why are you doodling? You should be taking notes," when doodling can be a way of taking notes. So increasingly, there is more appreciation of sketch noting in conferences and of drawing or combining words and images as not only an equally valid method of thinking and interpreting and thinking, but also perhaps quite distinct and different, and therefore with the possibility of giving you different and valuable insights. So I would encourage researchers who have never thought that they can draw to try it out, because, as they say, anyone can draw, and maybe hard and difficult at the beginning, but it may be very a very nice thing to do that can improve our practice.
So
I
I
think
suppose to, sorry, go ahead.
if you do something like drawing, or you have a project, a tiny little project that has a kind of artistic component, other people will ask you about that and they will be interested in it. And before you know it, you'll be working in several projects with similar kinds of aims.
So basically, from what you guys are saying, it's to surround yourself with like-minded people, but from different disciplines. You can learn from each other and sort of fire crazy ideas at each other. Just draw. Just go ahead and draw. Don't let your sort of confidence or whether it's right or not to stop you. And just get cracking. And once you start, then people will sort of see what you're doing, and hopefully you'll get more opportunity to do more of it.
Yeah, and don't be
Yeah.
afraid of people scooping your ideas or getting just share away, because that's a way of creating networks and getting ideas and of getting traction as well.
Thanks a lot for everything, guys. My next question is really, what are you working on next? Let's start with Simon and then move over to Peter.
Goodness. Well, let's choose something. I'm working on a number of things at once, but the thing that's in my mind at the moment, I am working on the beginning of a research project where I will use the creation of a graphic adaptation of a 19th century French play to reveal things about relationships between France and England in the 1870s. Silence.
Rapture. It's just kind of rapturous awe.
I mean, I suppose
Mon
there's no
Dieu.
need to, I don't know what to respond really. I mean,
No, I
it's
mean, crikey, let's hope we can do it. Talking about, I'm going to make a graphic novel out of a play that was a French play in England that was premiered in England in 1871. There's lots of things about French plays in England that are very, very interesting, that reveal English attitudes to Frenchness in the period. And there are certain things you really can't get a grip on unless you see them. And that leads us to think, oh, well, what do we do? Do we revive a play, the play, and look at it? But of course, then you're not reviving the audience, you're not reviving the theatre. You're not reviving the street that the theatre's on. You're not backstage. So suddenly, the graphic adaptation becomes a methodology, and that's where you can see all sorts of different things at once. And that's what we're doing.
you're creating the diagenesis of the play in context. So it's like,
Yes.
you know,
Yeah,
you see,
definitely.
I mean, I suppose in a couple of hundred years' time, there'll be one about the attitudes of England towards Europe.
Well, it's a timely project.
Is it EU funded? Sorry.
Is it EU funded? Yes, that's true. We're trying to raise money from Europe, yes.
All right. Cool. And what about you, Peter? What are you working on?
I just have to say that if that project was described to me with no names attached, I would know exactly who was doing it.
There goes peer review.
That's right.
Well, blind peer review, yeah.
I'm working on a lot of stuff, but I guess the most related thing that I'm just starting to work on is a project that involves sports science and engineering for people who are victims of stroke. They have developed this sort of recovery mechanism for people who have had a stroke, but the problem is it's really boring. So what they want to do is they want to have the mechanism connected to images, comics, so that while the person does the repetitive action, they are also reading, looking at these images. So there's all kinds of interesting things about, like, how dense can the image be, how much attention can you keep with the images. So it's like a comics, sports science, engineering project, and it's just at the very beginning, and I'm hoping to rope Ernesto and Simon into it as well.
Wow.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And I think, you know, just the idea of, like, will it be an interactive comic that changes depending on the activities, or like how will it work?
Well, what would happen, at least, I mean, we're still conceiving it, but I think what would happen is at the beginning, the process is quite slow. So with each repetition, you have a longer time to look. So I think the image at the beginning of the process would be very dense. And then as you improved, the image would lighten and you'd be able to go through it quicker. But that's just a preliminary thought.
Very cool.
Because the problem with all these recovery things that stroke victims have to do at home is that they don't do them because they're boring.
Yeah.
And so you have to do something. And if, you know, if they're just watching TV, that's not really an active mental function. But looking at drawings could be.
Yeah, and as you know, aphasia is one of the, well, can be a consequence of having a stroke. And
yeah,
there's work at HCID, you know, through the INCA project, and, you know, led by Stephanie Wilson and Abby Roper, that works in that project. She has also been a collaborator in the Parables of Care project. It's very nice how things start interconnecting. Aphasia is an interesting, I mean, I'm sorry, you know, it's from the point of view of the researcher is interesting as well because of its effects and you know, when we have a problem of communication, then using different methods of communication, alternative ways that may have been overlooked, it's always a good thing, I think. So very exciting.
Yeah.
And I suppose, as your sort of semi-guest, semi-co-host, Ernesto, what are you working on?
Oh, dear. Well, we are working on this series of the Interaction Lab podcast, of course. And Stuart and I have launched with colleagues at HCID, the Comics, Games, and Media Research Group. The two colleagues there, Sondus and Marisela, are leading in the preparation of an application or more for funding. We have different topics that we're working on at the moment. I don't want to say much at the moment because they may jinx it, but so we don't want that. But we are really, you know, excited about this new research group. We've started a blog as well where we will be making updates. You do have good news, right, Stuart? You will be hosting an event at City as part of...
We could be hosting the Unreal Engine meetup in December and January. So this is like, I think it's the largest one in the country, largest one in the world at the moment.
Yes.
And it's for people that use the Unreal game engine to create games and VR and et cetera experiences. So that's going to be fun. So that's kind of quite timely with us starting this group. So I think we're trying to get inroads into that community as well as the others that we're involved with.
Yeah, because we both share an interest in, you know, with others in City, HCID in games as well as narrative media and just video games, but role-playing games as well. So, you know, there we have the commonality of perhaps performance in role-play and thinking of things like narrative design, speculative design, science fiction prototyping, trying to introduce comics as much as we can in our work to enhance either the impact of research or to think about how, you know, startups or other companies or projects could benefit from a little bit of awareness of how, you know, games or comics as activities could help to improve design and outputs. So, yeah, lots of, you know, a couple of papers that are, you know, undergoing revisions and stuff. So I won't bore you with those details. But first we need to have, I know how this ends out. And that's one of the first tasks that we are busying ourselves with.
Brilliant. Well, I think that's been anything else from you guys, Simon and Peter?
No, that's great. That's good. We've been pretty thorough.
Yeah. It's been really... really exciting and interesting learning about your project. Like, it's one thing seeing the artifact, it's another thing hearing the story behind it. I say artifact, I hope that doesn't offend you, but, you know, seeing the comic itself and then hearing the story. It's brilliant. And I hope lots of people, well, our listeners are going to learn a lot from hearing you guys talk about the work that you've done. So I think I'll close this episode. I just want to thank again Simon Grennan and Peter Wilkins for giving up their time to speak to us. And I look forward to seeing everyone again in our next episode of the Interaction Lab podcast.